All right, well, welcome to the SCN Shane Christopher Neal podcast show. And very excited about today's guest. And I'm going to give you a little rundown on how I met this gentleman. His name is Riccardo Curzi. I believe he's from Italy initially, and he has been part of the music scene basically globally doing some amazing things. I attended a couple of tribute shows in Niagara Falls, six, 8 months ago or so. And I went to see a band called Hotel California, which is obviously an Eagles tribute band. And I think it was the day after or the week after, but shortly thereafter, I caught a band called Absolute Journey, and they were absolutely amazing. Riccardo Curzi was the manager and the front man and the gentleman who played Steve Perry. And we did an interview with him. Bobby Rock did an interview with Riccardo for BS Live Rocks on Your TV. And also there were some moments in the interview, or maybe it was a separate interview, where Riccardo was actually explaining to Bobby how to do Steve Perry moves. Bobby needs a lot of help in a lot of areas, but he definitely needs help in doing Steve Perry moves. But anyway, Riccardo was first class. And after the show, he had said to Bobby and I, you know, stay tuned because I've got a great tribute band coming after this one. It's going to be called Absolute Leopard, obviously a Def Leppard tribute band. And a Def Leppard, a great, great band. If you're a fan of, I don't want to call them metal, but 80s, 90s, glam rock, metal rock, whatever you might classify them as. And actually, the genre here on their Wikipedia says hard rock, heavy metal, glam metal. So there you go. They started in 1977, Def Leppard did, and had some great albums, obviously, through the years and some great hits. And I'm going to find out what Riccardo knows actually about Def Leppard as far as their history. But I remember the days of Pyromania in 1983, Hysteria in 1987, and Hysteria remains my favorite song ever by Def Leppard. But basically, Riccardo has turned in his Steve Perry for Joel Elliott. Joe Elliott is the frontman of Def Leppard. We'll get to it right now. This is all sponsored by MusicLifeMagazine.net. MusicLifeMagazine.net, the Shane Christopher Neal podcast show. Coming up right now, Riccardo Curzi.
This is the Shane Christopher Neal podcast. As co-host of BS Live Rocks on Your TV and co-founder of BS Live Rocks Entertainment Group, Shane has interviewed artists from Whitesnake, Guns N' Roses, Jason Aldean Band, and Canadian rock stars from Honeymoon Suite to Lee Aaron, Haywire, and Platinum Blonde. Shane is a drummer, podcaster, television, radio, and event host. This podcast is sponsored by MusicLifeMagazine.net. Now let's get talking. Here's your host, Shane Christopher Neal.
All right, cold, snowy, and Riccardo. How you doing, my friend?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thanks for taking time to do this. I know it's right around New Year's, and it's always a busy time. And I want to wish you, by the way, Happy New Year's as well.
Happy New Year to you as well. No problem at all. I'm always open to have great interviews and share a little bit of knowledge about this new project that's coming up as well.
So it's funny because I was telling the story in the intro that I went down to see Victoria, who you know, in Niagara Falls at Greg Fruin, to see the Hotel California show. And she says, you got to see this band Absolute Journey. And I'm like, yeah, I love Journey. And I think it was either the next day or the next week or whatever. And went to meet you. Yeah. And then we filmed that interview for television. And you guys were amazing as Absolute Journey. I want to point that out. And you said at the time, we're going to have a new project called Absolute Leopard. And that's why we're having this conversation. So my first question is, why Def Leppard?
So Def Leppard is if not the most influential band in my upbringing, probably one of the closest to the top. It's been I've been listening to them since I was like 16 or so, and they got me through, you know, the difficult part of adolescence. So they got a big meaning for me. And I was always intrigued about their particular sound that's nowhere else to be found, really. They're quite unique, if you think about it.
Absolutely. And that, I wanted to touch on that before you go any further, is that that was one of my questions, is how do you create that sound? Because it's not like AC/DC. It's not like Journey. It's not like any of those bands.
Well, it's quite a bit of work, especially in production, on the production side of things. But it's mostly about precision. It's not, you know, bands like Journey, for example, they swing a lot. Like they're more flexible, like in terms of tempo. They accelerate. Sometimes they get slower. They're more dynamically different. Def Leppard is much more of a stay on the tempo, very tight type of band. That's not extreme. It's not as in most things. It's not as technical as Journey, but at the same time, as an orchestration, is much more difficult to render. So it's a lot about coordination, especially on the beat. And there's a lot of coordination between, especially between like the two guitar players that basically should play like the same person, and between them and the rest of the band as obviously bass and drums as usual. But let's say that everything is has to be coordinated to the very, you know, to the very minimal detail.
And so Rick Allen, I mean, the biggest story of Def Leppard, or one of them, obviously, was that he had lost his arm back in 1984. December, actually, it was New Year's Eve, believe it or not, 1984. Yeah, yeah. And I watched your video, and your drummer has kind of that similar setup where he puts his ride cymbal almost in front of his face. He wears the big headphones. I assume he's playing to a click track as well.
Yeah, it's kind of mandatory for
yeah, I would
for
take
this
it.
Type of show, really. Yeah. But Rick Allen is another reason why I decided to trigger Def Leppard too. Being him one of the most inspirational figures that I've ever had the pleasure of influencing my life. After all, this guy lost his arm, and actually at a certain point they wanted to reattach the arm but they couldn't. So he had the nerve to put himself back on the table and help developing this technology, which is like doing whatever you do with the left arm through pedals, which was like undeveloped at the time. So he streamlined the development of a technology, and he did a certain amount of things like in 2 years that almost no human would put themselves to do. Quite admirable, and it all culminated in that show that they had in Donington. I think it was one of the first show of the Hysteria tour, and Joe Elliott was saying, "Oh, I wouldn't really want to put the attention on him, you know, after all that happened and this and this and that." And at a certain point, he was realizing that the crowds actually were interested in seeing him stand up and be cheered upon. And he became the hero of everybody's, obviously.
You know, it's funny. I remember, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Def Leppard to me was one of the first bands that I saw on MTV that had a video that they came out in the round where you saw the drummer and you saw behind him and you saw all of that. Am I right in that? I'm not 100%.
Yeah,
it was the first one, but it seemed like it.
Yeah, it was actually one of the first bands that did in the round shows. And that's probably the... you're referring to the second video of Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Right.
They did the first video for the UK TV. It didn't go that well. It was more like a studio-made video. Then they decided, okay, let's do it based on our tour with live footage. And we went kind of wild everywhere. And that 360 show, it was something that most venues weren't equipped for. So there was this interesting anecdote where they were actually, basically there was no communication in between the center of the stage and the dressing rooms. because there was no subterranean passages, nothing. Like that came kind of later.
Right.
So they were getting carted on covered up carts to the stage by like there were pieces of some gear. Amplifiers or anything, pieces of gear. Yeah. And funny enough, like one day they were visited by it was Robert Plant from Zeppelin. And he said, oh, you know what? This is new. This is cool. I would like to be part of it. So Robert Plant puts up a hat, pair of glasses, and he carts them in.
Nice.
Because he wanted to see how I was feeling, working in the type of new environment there.
Right.
Yeah. They've been pioneers of that. As Journey being pioneers of, video screens and things like that.
Do you use video screens for your show with with Def Leppard, with Absolute Leppard, or no?
It depends on which shows, but some shows allow us to do it. Some shows have restrictions, but we were also inquiring in actually having video walls from on the back.
Right.
That's a big expense, but we're trying to work to see if it's feasible, and that would be a great addition to the whole thing, especially because it gets us closer to their type of show. Their type of show nowadays is extremely visual. So.
Right. I want to ask you about you as a singer, because you do a great Steve Perry. Steve Perry is that perfect voice, that pretty voice, you know, and now you take on Joe Elliott, who is very raspy, to me, a completely different type of singer. Did you have to learn that? Is it just because you've been a fan for so long that you just know how to sing that way? How is it different for you?
Well, it's obviously, until you actually set yourself up to do it, you don't think of how to get down to those kind of details. Obviously, you need to adapt yourself. It's a lot to do with, how to properly use the emission to actually give that type of dynamic, more like aggressive type of sound without burning yourself.
Right.
And it's all about, it's almost like self-analytical. You obviously have your limitations as a human being, as a, your vocal apparatus. So you try to render the same sound without straining too much. And obviously that takes work, research, talking with other singers,
right,
see how they do it. The issue with Joe Elliott singing is that still, even though he has this kind of characteristic grittier sound, he still does really, really high notes, and that's the problem of most tribute bands out there. They are not able to reach the notes because they put too much stress on the grit part of the work.
Okay.
So it's kind of like common knowledge that it's a problem among tribute bands to actually get this effect where you can hit high. At the same time, you can do this on the lower notes, you can do this grittier type of emission. I like the challenge of that. And especially a guy that knew already every nook and cranny about, his little peculiar details of his voice. So at that point, it was just to... My job was mostly try to capture the actual type of vocal that he does without, obviously losing my own nature and the way that I do things and stress my voice too much that way. It's been challenging, but it's been also pleasurable. I like challenges in general. So, and you really love the music,
that helps.
Helped you out, yeah.
What is it a challenge to put a band together? This is a different band than Absolute Journey, I take it? And are some of them in both bands? And how do you find the right players that can fit this kind of tribute?
Well, it's... it's... as I said, it's different from Journey. for the fact that it's much tighter in terms of tempos. It's a little in a way in that sense it's more, it can be seen as easier, but it's not really easier. So you need players that are more of a batch of team players, really, that can adapt to each other and sing with each other tempo-wise. And, you know, there's a lot, for example, there's a lot of riffs and a lot of harmony progressions, right, on guitar that harmonize with each other or complete each other. For example, some riffs, one guitar player does the same riff on lower strings. The other one does it on higher. Put it together, it sounds really huge. There's a lot of coordination happening. So the goal was to find guys that would really cooperate at their best to create the perfect sound and you know, be in sync. At the same time also, which is the biggest hurdle there, to be able to sing those very high vocals as background vocals, because if you think about it, Def Leppard is basically a band of singers.
Do you do that acoustic part? I mean, if you go see Def Leppard, there's a point in the show where they all sit at the front of the stage and do some of the, I don't know, When Love and Hate Collide or Two Steps Behind. Do you do that stuff as well?
We're going to do that for sure. Yeah. That's going to be in Godfrey in the show, because it's part of their, you know, it's been part of their show for a while now. So
do you play you play two sets, one set? How many songs do you play?
Well, it depends. Like, we have our usual 90-minute show, kind of like the standard that we do with Absolute Journey as well. Sometimes it might be 2 hours. Sometimes it might be 2 hours, 15 minutes. It depends. But generally, when it's more than 90 minutes, we tend to separate, like, in two sets.
Right.
Usually 1 hour and 1 hour. That would be, like, the generally normal type of request that we would get. In terms of songs, we tend to cover mostly whatever happened before, like, let's say up to 1991 or 92, 93, if you want to go into the tour part of Adrenalize, but right, basically the biggest songs that everybody know range from a little bit of the first album, but mostly High and Dry, Pyromania, and Hysteria, of course.
Right.
And a little bit of Adrenalize as well. Like, that was a big album too.
So, unless I'm wrong here, Def Leppard had one number one hit song on Billboard with Love Bites in 1988, and they had one number two hit song also in 1988 on Billboard with Pour Some Sugar on Me. What are some of your favorites to sing and to play in? Maybe what challenges you, like, what songs do you get to that you think, you know what, I know we have to play this song because people know it, but man, this is not an easy one to sing?
Well, in terms of difficulty, there are quite a bit of songs that, you know, have the high range. There's I would say the most difficult tunes that you find are from Baromania. One of the most difficult ones is actually If I Envy Over It. That's it didn't go on charts, and it didn't even put it as a single, but lots of fans like to hear it because it's actually a difficult piece. It's kind of like the equivalent of Mother Father for Journey,
right?
And it's called Billy's Got a Gun. That song is particularly tough vocally, but you know, nothing that repetition wouldn't help, you know, like, it's all about repeating things until it's comfortable. And sometimes, you know, you put too much, everybody puts too much stress about, oh, how hard it is to do this, how hard it is to do that. If you put your time and you gum prepared, like, nothing really should scare you, really.
Do you do anything past Adrenalize too, by the way? Or no, go ahead, finish with your thoughts, but I wanted to know if you did anything past Adrenalize as well.
Yeah. So we were talking about songs that are difficult, also songs that are favorites.
Yes.
And I would say some of my favorite songs, for example, are not that really, like, you know, chart topper songs. For example, I really love Gods of War, which is from Hysteria, and it's a very beautifully crafted song with a lot of vocals. There's other songs like from older albums that obviously their style is different, but I prefer. There's Bringing On the Heartbreak is one of my all-time favorites, because probably that was the first song that would kind of sounded more like mature Def Leppard.
Okay, yeah, right.
And and as you said, like there's a lot more repertoire after Adrenalize, obviously. As yeah, much
I've,
as
I'm looking at that like, Slang, oh my god, an album called X. Yeah, like do you play any of that stuff or no?
Well, I'd say we give precedence to whatever people know best, as usual. So the older material is the one that's, we hammer on the most. But every once in a while, we can put in some semi-famous chart topper thing or more of a fan favorite thing. For example, there's a song called Promises that's from Euphoria, 1999. And believe it or not, probably people don't know it. That's one of the only songs from 1987 that they ever produced with Matt Lang again. Probably people didn't know that.
The
Euphoria album was had like three or four songs produced by Matt Lang. So that's why a lot of people say, "Oh, this album is so freaking great. It's different." You know, it's a different album from the ones that they've been doing lately, and that's because the master producer came back into the mix there. Not for the whole album, but just for there was Promises and what was that All Night and another couple songs. It was an interesting album, and at least we would like to do that one because through the years, actually, they liked it a lot. I really like the song Slang, so I would like to do that one. It's pretty tricky to render as a tune. It's full of a lot of things, but that's another song that is very fun playing, and I'm sure it's going to be very fun for the grouse to hear.
Do you use any tracks then, backing tracks?
Well, obviously they do as well.
Yeah.
So like there are strings that obviously don't get played on stage,
right?
Because their setup is just two guitar players, one bass player, drummer, and singer. So there are some tracks, including strings, organs, or whatever other instrument that's not on the stage. Obviously, it's just a giant render the records the way that they should sound.
Absolute
aside from that, like everything else is basically sung and played.
Right. Absolute Leopard. You know, I'm looking forward to this. Before we conclude here, though, I want to ask you a few questions just to test your knowledge of Def Leppard. But although the way you're talking and some of the things you said, I think you've answered some of them. My first question was actually going to be who produced 1981 High and Dry. But I think you obviously know that now.
Yeah, obviously. Well, it's been Matt Lang as well. Like, that's where he started.
Right. That's where I was going with that.
Yeah. That's where he started his plan where, exponentially on each album that was following, he would create more singles for the band on each album. So they had one on High and Dry, three on Borrowed Maintenance, and he started having seven singles on Hysteria. Like,
how about
that was his plan for building the band into stardom, and he actually scored on that intent.
What how about the first song on MTV in 1982 by Def Leppard? Can you guess that?
The 82 that was Bringing On the Heartbreak, that's for sure.
Well, that was it. The first song on MTV, it was Bringing On the Heartbreak, was the first one that they played by Def Leppard on MTV.
I mean, technically the. Let me think. Actually, no. That was produced later as a video. But there was also Me and My Wine, which was an older anthem about Pyromania beer. Like it was conceived during the Pyromania sessions, I think. And there was another oldie that was one of the first that was put into video for MTV.
How about? Go ahead.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you, my next question, though, was you know, everybody knows Rick Allen is the drummer of Def Leppard, but he was not the original drummer of Def Leppard, because in 77, 78, they had somebody else. Do you know who that was?
Oh, God. Well, that's pre-Reger Def Leppard. That's asking yes. a little bit too much. But one thing that I can tell for sure is that they had a different lead guitar player before, which
yes.
was on the records, and he was called Pete Willis.
Oh, okay. And, well, I didn't know that.
He basically he worked with them until the recording session of Pyromania, and then helped creating all the riffs from Pyromania. Then Phil Collin came in and he started putting solos in, and he started re-recording the material. So let's say that Pyromania is half Pete Willis, half it's half Pete Willis, half Phil Collin, and obviously half Steve Clark too. Like it's split in three. Steve Clark always being the, in my opinion, the mastermind of the whole thing. Like was the person that was giving it a cohesive idea to the whole song. And back then, you know, it was it was not much about showing off on these tunes. It was mostly like serving the song, which is an interesting concept. Like a lot of bands were coming out just, you know, to have this big ballsy heavy metal sound to capture the interest of the people. Def Leppard was always more like, let's do great songs so people will appreciate us. So the most of the time they say, oh, we're not really heavy metal. Well, they've been in that type of music for a while. But obviously then they became like the perfect mix of heavy metal and pop, and hard rock and pop. And I think still to these days, they're masters of that, because for some strange reason, really nobody else mastered that fusion of different types of musical culture as the way that they did.
Yeah, because
nobody attempted it.
I see here, even on their Wikipedia page, right? And they talk about them being heavy metal, hard rock. I'm thinking, I don't know that I thought Def Leppard was a heavy metal band, but you know,
well,
maybe
you know,
in
but
some
back
things,
in the back in the day, especially the very beginning, like from the first album to up to Pyromania, really. Like they had songs that that were, you know, people were saying this is new wave of British heavy metal,
right?
And it really was. Then their refinement process, the fact that Def Leppard never stood still and stuck to one formula, brought them to evolve from that type of musical approach. But it's interesting, like, you know, they never really wanted to sit down and say, okay, we're done, we're going to do this for the rest of our lives. And I think it's an honorable thing. And at times it can be hard for fans, maybe, but they've been cohesive in their sound throughout all their career. And that made all of the stylistic shifts much more pleasurable for fans, because they still had their sound backbone that basically was introduced in Pyromania, was perfected in Hysteria. And from then on, that sound became Def Leppard.
You know, Hysteria was a big part of my life. Went 12 times platinum in the U.S., 12 million units, and 25 million worldwide. You know, I'm looking forward to this show, because the Journey show that you did was great. And by the way, we'll just touch on that. You're still doing Journey, correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Absolute Journey's never been better. Really.
That's great.
Like, we got a lot of shows per year. Right now, we're starting to fill up even January's, which is by far always the most difficult month of the year. So...
And you're the man.
With that project, we're gonna still hammer away to make Absolute Journey even a better product with time.
No, and I say you're the man because you're the manager too, right? So
yes, as well.
Absolute Leopard, are they going to be playing in Niagara, do you think, come next year as well? I'd love to see you guys if you guys are playing in the Falls. I don't know if you know that yet or if you're looking into that, but...
We're looking into that too. I mean, we're looking into... Right now, it's more of a building the awareness around the band a period of time. Obviously, there's... you know, other older clients of Absolute Journey that are going to be interested in the product. We're looking into bringing this to possibly in mid-year next year to bring it to Alberta as well. So, yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, we're going to try to build it as successful as our other venture, Absolute Journey, that's for sure.
And how
I think there's a lot of ground to do that because... there's a lot of, put it that way, there's a lot of demand and not very much of an offer in the market for this type of show.
Well, that's
so lots of people are going
to
want it.
Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to this. So what's the best way to reach out to you guys? I mean, you're on YouTube. I mean, you have a promo video up there now, but yep. Do you guys have a website for Absolute Leopard? I didn't check or anything else.
Yeah. It's absoluteleopardtribute.com. Mind you, that it's a lot of people say Leopard, but it's Leppard.
Right,
it's different, and lots of people can't find it because of that. But it's absoluteleopardtribute.com. It's currently actually we're finishing to build it, but we also have an Absolute Leopard Tribute page on Facebook, and we're gonna start basically. Trying to have a presence on all of the social network that there are, you know, the major ones that that really count. So you're most likely, if you have a social profile somewhere, you're going to be able to find us easy.
Well, you know what? You do a great job. I'm looking forward to seeing this. And thanks, by the way, to Joel Knappen at musiclifemagazine.net. Make sure you check out that website. He's the sponsor of this show. Well, and a great website that has stuff from all over the globe, everything to do with music, photos, interviews, features. This podcast is going to be up on musiclifemagazine.net in the next week or so. I'm going to put it on my social. I'll send it to you as well. And I appreciate you doing this. This is awesome.
Thanks to you guys. Like it's been a great experience, and I'm always open to talk about anything music. So
absolutely,
it's my life. It's our life, and we're very, very blessed to be doing this job, and you know, having people interested in what we're doing, and you know, making somebody's life better out there.
All right, Absolute Journey and Absolute Leopard.